Christmas in Beverly Hills. I mean, it's not natural.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 18, A Walsh Family Christmas. Yay! And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. Buldia, it's me again. Just want to remind everybody that you can buy an ad on this very podcast.
Indeed.
Or any of our podcasts on previously.tv. Only 50 smackaroos for a personal ad. If you want to wish somebody a happy birthday or you want to pitch a charity or something like that, $50. But if you have a tried and true business ad, that is $100. And you can buy across multiple podcast for a discount. Go to previously.tv/ads to find out more. And now on with the show.
Sarah, it seems like it was just Halloween and now it's finally Christmas already.
Yes. You'll be really bored by this supersized episode.
Yeah. Oh. You'll wish you could flush this log down the toilet. Moving on. Sorry.
You win. Let's get into it.
This is a super long episode, and yet, even though there are enough storylines for there to be an E story, we have the fewest clips of any episode we've ever done, which is extraordinary. So let's quickly get through this, and we can go back to...
log. I'm sorry.
Stuffing ourselves with popcorn balls and shortbread.
Speaking of logs, Christina Lee.
Yeah, so in the episode where she loses it two episodes ago, I believe, we both talked about remembering a scene where Brandon gives her the Minnesota Twins jersey, and we were not crazy, as many people posted in the thread. That does happen. It's just in this Christmas episode, not in the same episode where she goes to the loony house. So Brandon goes to visit Emily at the crazy house. He's got a wrapped gift with her. And weirdly enough, this is like one of the few times I can ever remember someone on a TV show opening a present that was actually wrapped like a real present, like not with
right,
a lid
and not
that
like
lifts
the two
off.
Halves
yeah.
Wrapped. Right.
She actually ripped paper and it is the Twins jersey.
I guess they knew every take would be equally terrible, so they just did it on the first one.
Maybe. Also, interestingly, since she's been hospitalized, she's had her roots done, and they look better than ever. They are actually, like, kind of honey instead of black or brown like they normally are.
Yeah, except the shape of her hair is, like, I don't know what that is.
It's a little
dying
poofy.
Ficus.
Yeah. Anyway, Brandon says he's tried calling. Her doctor thought she should stay out of the touch for a while, and so he offers to leave, but she says it's fine. She apologizes again for everything. The hospital has been good for her. She feels better. She doesn't know when she'll be back at school. Spoiler alert, never. And then she opens the present, and it's the Twins jersey. Everyone signed the card. They hug. The end. Like, that's seriously, we didn't even have any clips from it because it's one scene, and it's really boring. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like that's a terrible idea to be like, here's this thing that basically was a catalyst for making you go crazy and a card from people who I'm sure those signatures were forged. Like, the whole thing just seems like,
yeah,
whatever. I mean, thanks for giving us closure, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
See you in two Thanksgivings. Anyway.
Moving on. D story. What is up with Jack McKay? So Dylan shows up to Brenda's job, which we will get to give her a kiss and some candies. And, be cynical about the Christmas spirit and give her his present now. It's half a heart necklace. He has the other half, which is kind of a girly choice, but whatever. Who am I to judge? And the
who's
reason.
Who's beef fried? Who's Saint Anne's?
So she's getting it early because he's not going over to the Walsh's for Christmas Eve. He is going to prison to see his dad. his actual dad this time. This is the episode where Josh Taylor takes over playing Jack McKay. Brenda offers to go with him. He says she doesn't have to. And then the customer interrupts to complain about how retail works. If I buy this now, is it going to get marked down after Christmas? Like, yes. Are you new to capitalism? Anyway, that's not the point. So then Dylan is at prison. Jack comes out and is shocked to see Dylan, and they have this exchange in clip number two.
Thanks for coming. I just guess I never expected to see you here.
Why?
Well, because I just figured that that you kind of hated me right about now.
No. No, I don't hate you, Dad. But when I think about all the Christmases that I spent alone with the maid while you were off in the Bahamas, or skiing, or somewhere with one of your girlfriends, I guess I finally wanted you to know what it was like to be lonely at Christmas. And I remembered how much it hurt, as much as I wanted to. I just couldn't leave you hanging on Christmas Eve.
Jack McKay's Christmases sound pretty fun. I would like to spend Christmas with him personally.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, so since Dylan has been nice enough to
Stow away in his giant pants. Just kidding. He's actually wearing normally sized prison togs pants. But if you haven't already, I encourage regular listeners to go to our site and in the search box, enter McKay's Pants.
Oh, yeah.
There is a Christmas album of songs by the Giant Pants. And a couple of other entries featuring his ginormo Pearl sweatpants. So please enjoy that.
Yeah, you're a real fan of those pants. And rightly so. They are huge. They contain multitudes, literally.
Hey, you could be with the pants or you could be under. What happened there? And let's just move on.
So Jack goes on to say that he thinks of himself in his current situation as a monk. He just thinks and reads and eats bad food. And he always hated people who meditate, like Iris, as they both say. But now he does meditate, and he thinks about Dylan and how proud he is of Dylan, and that Dylan is already making things better between them. And Dylan goes on to say this in clip number three.
There's some food in there. It's nothing fancy. Maybe we could have dinner.
Do you still have that girlfriend?
Brenda. Yes, I do.
Bring a picture.
Gross.
Well, you go have Christmas with her, Dylan.
Why?
Because you have given me probably the greatest Christmas present that I could ever ask for. More than I deserve. Now you go make yourself happy.
Dad, I'm here for you. Brynn's got her own family. I don't want you to be alone.
Hey. I'm not alone anymore. Merry Christmas, son.
Kay. I mean, really?
Okay.
I don't know how we're supposed to feel about that. Like, your son is there.
It's not like the prison is in town.
Yeah.
He probably drove like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Dick.
Yeah.
Also, don't be a creepy spank bankaloo about your son's girlfriend. Like, the phrasing was just.
Spank bankaloo.
I gotta make my own fun. And so does Jack McKay.
Oh, it's true. Oh, no.
My favorite part of that is him being like, go spend Christmas with your girlfriend's family until it's like, gross. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
You mean with Brandon? Hell no.
Seriously. Oh. All right, that's the D plot. Moving on, C story. Jackie and Mel and the failed Christmas dinner. So Kelly's mom, Jackie, wants to make a big deal of having David and Mel over for Christmas dinner. She's even going to cook, even though she never cooks. And they suck at cooking, including Kelly. Jackie, as they're fussing around, says that things are going so well with Mel that she may start cooking more. She wants Kelly to know how important Mel is to her. And we get the exposition that they've been dating for 6 months, which, of course, times out right because they started seeing each other in the summer after the beach club meeting. And then Jackie can't believe that there's still so much passion between them. Kelly's like, gross. And Jackie's like, passion for life. Kelly's like, whatever. And then we get this clip, number four.
Mom, look. They're getting stiff.
I told you.
How weird.
Get your mind out of the gutter, Jack McKay. She's talking about egg whites. Anyway.
But then she's like holding up the whisk and like beater. Sniffing them. Yeah. These people really don't cook at all.
No, not a bit. And then the doorbell rings. Jackie goes to get it, and it's Mel with flowers that are clearly flowers of apology. He has bad news. He and David can't come for dinner. David's mother doesn't want David to be at Jackie's for Christmas, and Jackie's like, well, that sucks, but okay. And then it turns out she wants Mel there as well, just for Christmas, because she's so depressed and he's worried that she's going to kill herself, I guess, although he doesn't put it that way, but that's clearly the subtext.
It's pretty good foreshadowing. Like, of course, yeah. It all comes out of nowhere in a few seasons when David's mom is like, I believe, living
homeless.
Outdoors
yeah.
and has gone off various meds. But it's a little surprising that this groundwork was actually laid, possibly by accident. Ew, I said laid, sorry. for her mental illness arc later.
Yeah, this is very early. You're right. give them credit where it's due for once. But Jackie is not feeling very empathetic about his ex-wife, which is reasonable for her as well, and basically yells at him and then is like, well, fuck you then, essentially. They don't exactly break up, but it seems like they could. And then Kelly comes out of the kitchen looking sad and hugs Jackie. And later, Kelly goes to the store also to bother Brenda and recap the visit. They decide that they're going to go over to the Welsh's for Christmas Eve instead. And later, Kelly... is at her house and opens the door to David. And as I have it in my notes, his silky jockey silks, his blouse is really not okay. But he's brought over her Christmas gift, and she's pissy at him at first, but he explains he doesn't love being caught in the middle either. He didn't want Jackie and Kelly to get hurt, and he doesn't especially want to see his mom either, it sounds like. And then they have this exchange in clip number 5.
Don't open that in front of your mom.
Why?
It vibrates. I'm just kidding. It's a joke. I swear, I'm just kidding.
That is actually a funny joke. Come on, Kelly.
Oh, silver.
So later, David and Mel show up at the Walsh's, and he apologizes to Jackie. He thought that his ex-wife was in trouble, but he realized he needed stronger boundaries, and he never even went over, because Jackie is the one he wants to be with. He's in love with her, and they kiss, whatever. That's the end of that storyline. Who cares?
Jackie killing it once again in a lamé turtleneck.
Oh, yeah.
Customary earrings from the Limited. Well done.
Yeah, the lamé turtleneck is really a weird choice for cooking in, because if he's not supposed to have come over for hours and hours, she's going to be really hot in the kitchen. But again, they don't know what they're doing. And it's all going to be failed anyway, so I guess it doesn't really matter. Moving on. The B story, Steve's search for his roots, continues. Steve's bus pulls up in bumfuck New Mexico. We see that he's been talking about all his problems to a very cute slash unlucky brunette on the bus, and refers to his real mom, and they never saw her again. Kelly, meanwhile, back in Beverly Hills, is worried about Steve. He's been gone 4 days. No one has talked to him or even texted. Just kidding. Obviously, this is before texting, including his mom. And Kelly also says this very Kelly remark in clip number 6.
This really sounds weird, but I miss him. I do. I mean, especially around Christmas, you know. He'd always buy me something really nice, even though we weren't going out.
I mean, it's not the best.
MVP. MVP.
Totally. It's not the best reason to miss someone at Christmas. It's also not the worst, I'm going to say.
Yeah. I mean, this year you're probably looking at like a gas station rose, jerky. I get it.
Yeah. A Roger Miller cassette. Anyway.
Conway Twitty.
So Steve starts a search for his roots at the hospital in town. He asks a nun/nurse who could not be more over it. If she knows anything about Karen Brown, she comes back with a folder and then realizes that he's under 18, so he's going to need written permission to take it from his written permission from a parent before she can give it to him. Steve tries to work her. It doesn't work. She gives him a form to fill out, and then he tries to bribe her, but she audibly gasps, and there's a gif of this in the visual aids. So he goes to mope on a payphone, like, that's directly across from the counter that she's standing behind. It's like, I'll give Steve this. He really knows how to be sad in places where people are going to definitely see and pay attention to him. He's like a child. But anyway, she
and
feels...
It works.
It does work. She
people
feels bad.
Sort of like, so what's going on, Steve? But gets results.
Yeah. So she finally says that he can look at it, but he can't take it anywhere. And so he's very excited and writes down the address and hugs her. But then he gets in a cab and goes to the address. And now it's a strip mall. So when we next see Steve, he's got his patented Emily Valentine pile of quarters. So he can start calling every person named Brown that's in the phone book. Using, by the way, a pen on the shared phone book, which he ruins. Also in the visual aids, because it's upsetting to me. And finally, one of the last people that he calls is someone who possibly knew Karen Brown, based on the fact that he hangs up on Steve. And then we next see Steve showing up at Brown's Cafe to talk to some old dude who is apparently Karen's father, Al. And Steve identifies himself, says his name is Steven. Al says he knows he helped to name Steve. We find out that when she had Steve, she was still in high school and wanted a home for her baby. Anyway, this is mostly in clip number 7, so let's just hear it.
Why did you give me up?
Well, your mother was very young when you were born, Steve. Still in high school, didn't have a husband. She wanted a home for her baby. A family to love him and take care of him. I tended to agree with her.
So what'd she do after high school?
She went to college in Albuquerque, met a nice young man, got married.
That's why I couldn't find her name in the book. She's changed it.
That's it. The Mulligan.
Does she ever talk about me? Think about me?
I'm sure in her private moments she did, but not around her family.
Can I have her number out? I don't know why, but I've got this strong feeling that I should be with her at Christmas. I've got to meet her. I've got to know who my real mother is.
Well, it's going to be kind of tough. You see, in the first place, when she gave you up, she made it pretty final. That's why she picked a good home. Has it been a good home, Steve?
Well, yeah.
Good. That's the way it looks to me.
But if I could talk to her, Al, like I'm talking to you here now, I'm sure she could handle it. Her son.
She died, Steve.
God. Finally.
Son's dead.
What?
Real bad auto accident not far from here.
Okay, that detail's not necessary.
This is my favorite Monty Python skit. She's dead. She's gone. She no longer exists.
She ceased to be.
Yeah.
She died, Steve. Karen's dead.
What?
Real bad auto accident not far from here.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
I'm sure she would have liked to have seen you. But she's gone.
So just to recap, Steve's got this very strong feeling he should be with his mother at Christmas, yet has no feeling that when her father refers to her in the past tense that maybe she's not alive anymore.
Yeah. Steve. Typical.
Yes. Back in Beverly Hills, it's Christmas Eve. Jim is playing Christmas carols on his stupid electric piano when the doorbell rings. And it's Sam, Samantha Sanders. Cindy is very excited and recognizes her from television. Samantha wonders if they've heard from Steve. Nobody has.
I believe she's wearing the same Christmas at Starfleet outfit as in the last episode. No,
it's also red, but I think this one is trimmed in white, not black. But yes, it's very, quote, festive, unquote.
Same collection.
Same, definitely. Yes. She got it from the same rack at Talbot's. Anyway, she's full of self-recrimination. Cindy orders her to stay for Christmas. And then in New Mexico, Al brings Steve to look at Karen's grave, something I feel only people on TV shows and movies do, because whatever.
Also, she's buried in like this Young Guns 2, Billy the Kid, Boot Hill, with like a wooden cross. I don't know. Like, It's a small town. It's not 1871. Like, take it easy, Saul Star. Anyway.
Yes. And then we get this exchange in clip number 8.
You know, I never did have a grandfather. Would you be my grandfather, Al?
It'll be my pleasure.
And we'll keep in touch. I'll send you cards, and maybe someday you'll come visit me in L.A.
Sure thing.
All together now. They never saw him again. Ever. But it's cute.
It's cute.
It's that a cute moment. Sweet moment. Even if you know that nothing is definitely going to happen from it, because nothing ever does. But Steve asks if Al can drive him to the airport because he really has to get back really fast. So, of course, he does. And when he gets there, there's a guy in an all red flight suit. He's got a white beard, and they work out a deal where Steve gives him all his money to charter his little plane. And this guy accepts. We will get back to him in a second. Back in Beverly Hills, Samantha excuses herself to leave the Walshes. Jim asks if there's anything else they can do, and she just asks him to pray that Steve is okay in New Mexico. And when she comes home, it seems like it's an empty house, but then she hears something, and upstairs it's Steve watching TV. He's sorry that he left her. She's happy that he's home, and then they wrap things up with clip number 9.
I had to do it. I had to find out who my real mom was.
And was she everything you expected?
Everything and more.
I see.
Let me tell you about her. She's beautiful. And she's caring. And she created me out of her love. 17 years of it. With her busy life, she always made sure I was as happy as I could be. She always tried to show me to do the right thing. She was always there for me when I didn't. Gave me everything I ever wanted. Probably more than I deserved. And no matter what, she always let me know how much she loved me. I'm sorry I had to go so far away from you.
I'm gorgeous. I'm so glad you're back.
I'll promise you one thing.
What's that?
I'll never leave you on Christmas again.
That is how I feel about TV. You nailed it, Sarah.
I know. Oh, thanks, TV.
And that's it. I feel like we barely ever hear about Steve even ever being adopted again, so good, because this did not cover anyone involved in Glory, frankly.
Yeah, no. And what we clipped is like the tip of the ice bore. So you're welcome.
Seriously.
This part's even worse.
Oh, God. The A-plot. Yes, the A-plot. The Walshes meet Santa. So Brenda has gotten a job at a fancy women's boutique in Beverly Hills. They somehow, for reasons, have hired her 2 days before Christmas. Like, how much extra business do you think you're going to have on the 23rd and 24th? But whatever. Kelly and Donna come in to visit her. They think it's hilarious that she's acting as a shop employee, which is kind of funny. It's like the Friends episode where Rachel's old friends from Long Island come in and see her, and look at you in your apron. You look like you're in a play. It's like that. Brenda invites them to come over that night. It's the Walsh family tradition to get their tree 2 days before Christmas. But then we cut.
It's not a thing.
No, not a thing. Stupid. Cut over to a tree lot where the trees are all dead because it's hot as hell. And back at the house, Cindy is talking to her mother in Minnesota about their white Christmas, and she's sad and jealous and missing Minnesota. And then she comes outside to see Jim and Brandon unloading a huge dead tree that they bought. Here's my question. I mean, I have a million questions. Jim tries to defend it as not that bad, but Cindy is furious. And Brenda comes home from work to see Brandon spray painting the tree green. And then when Cindy comes out, they say there's talk about, like, well, next year we'll just get a fake tree. Like, why didn't you just get a fake tree this year? Like, there are fake trees. Why would you buy this garbage tree that's going to just shed needles all over your house rather than just get a fake one that is fake but is going to look better?
Whatever. And you're making it even more of a fire trap. Like, they hang lights on that shit, no?
Yes.
That's going to go up like all the Roman candles.
Oh, my God. I don't know.
No self-respecting dad who was behaving the way Jim Walsh was about not, you know, tying up the landline a couple episodes ago is going to let you bring a painted tree in the house.
No.
And everyone is carefully, like, bedewed with sweat to let us know that it's really hot out. Like, take your fucking long sleeve shirt off then, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
Put on a t-shirt. It's Christmas vacation. Who cares?
Yeah.
Or turn up the air conditioning. Like, you've lived here. You didn't just get here.
Yeah. This is your second Christmas here, because they talk about how last Christmas they went back to Minnesota. So, like, this is your second winter in L.A. Figure it out.
And whatever. I don't, like, here's one sort of silver lining about this. The way they were making Cindy out to be such a whatever, I miss seasons pill about the situation. I was like, is this going to some very special episode about Cindy's menopause, please? Really, we'll kill myself if we have to go there. But it didn't. Yay!
No, we don't. And you know why, Sarah? Because she, in this episode, is the age that we are now. Chew on that. God. Horrifying. Anyways.
Is she really?
Yeah, she's like, I think she was 43.
Okay.
At the time. Sorry.
It's amazing how the way they dress her just makes her look.
Oh, completely.
Very, yeah.
But also, like, a person in their 40s in the 90s was a little bit different than a person in their 40s now. I mean, at least I have to tell myself that, or I'll eat my service revolver. Moving on.
Look, our immaturity keeps us young.
It's true. Not having children has really helped. High five. High five across six time zones.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Speaking of looking young, when we next catch up with this stupid tree, all the kids are over to trim it, and Donna's brought her Christmas butt cheeks to hang out of her Christmas romper. For if you think I'm kidding, go to the visual aids. You can see, like, the underside of, like, her, the cup of her, there's no way to describe it. You can see the bottom of her butt cheeks hanging out of her shorts
on her thighs. Like,
yes.
No.
Not okay. Jim proposes a Minneapolis Christmas with all the kids' friends, but when they come out, everyone has other plans. Donna's going skiing. Dylan, as we know, is going to see his dad in prison.
Going to Lompoc.
Yes. Kelly's got the dinner, blah, blah, blah. Of course, we know as soon as we hear all the details of these plans, none of them is going to come to fruition. Sorry to spoil that for you, but you've seen TV before. Then we're at the Peach Pit, where Brandon, for reasons that are never explained, he and Nat are all dressed up, like, in tuxedo shirts and bow ties. Not explained. It's like, it's the day before Christmas Eve, so it's
and
whatever.
And Santa hats, which...
Yeah.
Are you also in a barbershop quartet?
Right.
Four Knicks.
So an indigent gentleman comes in. It's the guy who played the owner of Melville's from Cheers. And he orders coffee on the house, which I like his style for spelling it out. Like, I want coffee and I am not going to pay for it. Hello.
He's only a little apologetic about it, too. He's like, can I have that for free? I don't really have any money. Brandon's like, I'll check. Like,
right.
No.
Just give, yes, take it out of your shitty tips. But whatever. He gives him the coffee for free, and then he goes to check with Nat if he can give him free dinner. And Nat is like, oh, it's starting already, because every Christmas, Nat opens up the Peach Pit for free for the homeless. Brandon didn't know about this somehow. And Nat says he never told him because Brandon spends the holidays with his own family. But Brandon's like, no, I will come in and help tomorrow. We do not see this happen. No. So Nat tells Brandon to give him the special. No substitutions. Like, okay, Christmas spirit. And then there's talk about Nat's Santa suit, which he's proud to show for Brandon. Like, Brandon's never seen a fucking Santa suit before. And then he leaves it out. The homeless guy eyes it. So I think we all know where this is going. And then later, Andrea shows up. Brandon gives her a Merry Christmas mixed messages kiss on the mouth in the GIF, or in the visual aids. I made a GIF because it's not appropriate for.
And even she's like, what are you doing, Ace?
Seriously.
It's like, should I be happy about this or annoyed that you're fucking with me again? I'm going to go with annoyed. Good for you, Andrea.
Yes. She's also sad about Christmas because she doesn't get to celebrate it. In fact, her family doesn't celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah, which, whatever. I don't know why having a mixed marriage means you have to be Jehovah's Witnesses about it. But he invites her to bring Grandma Rose to Christmas Eve at the Walsh's, but she and Grandma Rose are going out to the movies, which, again, like your style, that is what you do on Christmas Eve.
And that is celebrating Christmas for Jews.
Yes.
Chinese in the movies. Come on.
Yep. And some abstainers, some people that celebrate Christmas go to movies on Christmas, which we did lots. Yes, even when I lived in Toronto with my parents.
Many times as well. Proud tradition.
It's a good time. And then Nat notices that the Santa suit is gone. Oh no! And then when we next see the homeless guy from Melville's, he is in a Santa suit, wandering into Brenda's store. Brenda and her boss, Deidre, are aghast. Deidre stalks over to kick him out. Brenda asks Deidre to be nice, which obviously is beyond her capabilities. And Brenda is sad. And later, he comes back. Deidre yells at him again. I don't know why we need to see it one more time, but we do. And finally, Brenda is leaving work on Christmas Eve, just in time to see a couple of cops harassing homeless Santa in clip number 10.
Why don't you take a bus to the shelter downtown? You can get a free meal there tonight.
Because you can't be hanging around here.
Merry Christmas.
Look, jerk, we're not fooling around here.
What's going on here?
Don't worry about it.
I know this guy.
You do?
Yeah, he's Santa Claus.
But we call him Wally. Here we fucking go. Fucking Brenda.
Yeah, so after she has defended homeless Santa, she shames the cops, and after they leave, he thanks her. She asks if he has anywhere to go tonight, and he does this whole, I have many houses to visit, blah, 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 blah. So she invites him home with her, and later we next see her bringing Santa in the back door, and she explains the situation. Samantha comes in as this is ending and hilariously is weirded out by Santa in a tiny take that made me laugh. And Brenda tells her parents that her instincts tell her that Santa is harmless. And later, Cindy brings more food out. Santa won't let Jim take his sack away from him and put it somewhere as he's loading up his plate. And then Andrea shows up. She's got a brisket that Grandma Rose made, Lucky Walsh's. Brandon and his hideous sweater are very happy to see Andrea. And then Santa starts giving out gifts. He gives Cindy a very nice scarf. Brenda gets earrings from Tiffany or in a Tiffany box. And Jim starts getting very suspicious. Andrea tries to refuse the gift, but and Brenda notices it's something they sell in the store. And then the Walsh parents watch this very suspiciously in clip 11.
This one's for you.
Oh, I couldn't.
Of course you could. Santa has something for everybody.
What's a safe?
Oh.
We saw those in my store.
You know, I hate to say this, but Brenda finds this homeless man on the street.
With a bag full of expensive merchandise.
Excuse me, I'm going to go count the silver.
That's a really out of character line for Cindy, I have to say. I mean, I know they have an indigent person in their house, or so it appears, but still.
Yeah, no, she'd be the last one who would be like giving him the stink eye.
Yeah. And then Brandon, the gift that Santa has picked out for him is the most basic Brandon gift that anyone could ever imagine in clip number 12.
I don't believe this vintage World War I dog tags. Outstanding. Thank you.
Ugh, shut up, Brandon.
Well, what? As opposed to brand new World War I dog tags? Since when are you a hardcore history listener? And that's creepy, and shut up.
Seriously.
I mean, actually, it's not even that bad, but because it happened adjacent to Brandon, I'm over it.
Agree. Donna shows up because there was no snow in Mammoth. And then Cindy screams down for Jim to come up. Her engagement ring is gone. Oh, no. But nothing else is. She's in a state. She picks up the phone to call the police. And Jim takes the phone out of her hand and gives her a ring box because he had it reset with a bigger stone. She feels like a Grinch for suspecting Santa. And she's going to decide to believe the best of everyone because it's just that easy. Downstairs, Donna sits in Santa's lap and tells him her whole Christmas sob story, which is when we learn that Christmas is her birthday. So Santa makes them all sing happy birthday, which they sing actual happy birthday, which you hardly ever would have seen on TV at that time. And then Dylan shows up, telling Brenda his dad is doing well. He goes to give Jim a manly handshake, but Jim pulls him into a hug in a nice moment that I gift because it made me so happy.
We also get the line, Christmas spirit finally penetrated a McKay. I actually had to pause it and say to my empty office and a sleeping feline, that's what she said.
Yeah. Then Andrea is telling Santa her Christmas gift list, which includes a computer organizer, hilariously. And as Dylan comes into the living room, he says, haven't I seen you? Didn't I see you somewhere earlier? And that's when, you know, now that we all of the storylines have coalesced, it was the same actor playing Santa at the prison and also playing the pilot that Steve ran into in New Mexico. Because, oh my God, it really is the real Santa, you guys. Oh my God. Burp. Matt shows up with carolers. Cindy makes him come in for a drink. Donna and Kelly give him simultaneous cheek kisses, and he's weird about it. Nat found his Santa outfit under the counter. Oh my God, so where did homeless Santa get his Santa outfit from? Is he real Santa? And then, oh, I missed the Dylan clip. Back up. This is a...
Oh, Tara, you blew it.
I know. It's the very last clip, though.
Don't be such a squeef.
I know, I'm the worst. I'm a Christmas squeef.
There it is.
And then we hear homeless Santa's whole fucking sob story in our final clip.
Didn't I see you somewhere earlier today, Santa?
I don't think so. I've been here the whole evening.
Just who are you, anyway?
What's wrong? Doesn't anybody believe in Santa anymore?
Oh, come on. This is Beverly Hills. There's a Santa lurking around every corner. You just have to know where to find him.
Kelly.
I wanted to know what happened to the magic of Christmas. I didn't believe it existed anymore. You see, for over 40 years, Mrs. Claus and I lived in a big house high up on the hill. And she made the most wonderful Christmas dinner. We had a big tree with loads of presents for lots of little elves. But the elves grew up and they moved away. Some of them far away and had elves of their own. Santa used to visit them UPS and Mrs. Claus always made sure they got their gifts on time.
Elves be fucking.
And even though it was only she and Santa left in this big house, she still made the most splendid Christmas dinners. But last year, Mrs. Claus died.
I mean, that's sad.
And as far as I was concerned, Christmas died with her. I wanted to pretend that Christmas didn't exist anymore. But something inside of me told me to go looking for it anyway. I was beginning to believe the only place Santa belonged in this town was in jail. Until that girl took in a lonely old man for dinner. Thank you, Brenda, for making me believe again in the spirit of Christmas.
Now, Brenda, Santa Claus has been a lonely man for a long time.
Yeah, thank you, Dave, for making me wish I was dead thanks to the specter of elf porn.
It sucks.
Bank Bankaloo. Yeah, it sucks.
God. Let's fucking wrap it up. I can't believe how long this is. So, after Nat comes in, Brandon drifts outside. People are singing Christmas carols badly. Repeating verses, by the way, which no one corrects. That would not happen on my watch, by the way.
We shoot to kill on this property.
No one is close to a key. Then Cindy looks out the window and sees snow outside. And then we cut to Brandon spraying a snow hose. The way they cut to it is so matter of fact that it's almost funny. Like, here's the fakery of Christmas. This ought to hold the little SOBs, snow hose. And then Steve shows up with Samantha. Steve also recognizes Pilot Santa and then creeps up behind Kelly and blows on her to get her attention. Note to everyone listening, do not do this. It's gross. And
you will get an elbow in the eye.
If you're lucky. And the snow falls. And that's the end, fucking finally, as it says in my notes. It just goes on and on. Oh my God. I mean,
Mary
I don't want
to
add to it.
Joseph's actual journey to the manger did not fucking take this long.
It's true. And that's Christmas. So let's wrap it up before it actually becomes Christmas as we record this. Most valuable player, Sarah, who is your choice?
Deidre, I guess, because she's like, hey, Santa, move it along.
Yeah, Deidre's a good choice. I'm going to give it to Kelly for just being in it for the presents because, you know, it is Christmas.
Yeah, that's fair.
Least valuable player.
Oh, there's so many to choose from.
Seriously.
Wardrobe.
Yeah, for not getting double stick tape on Donna's ass. Because seriously.
I think Andre is in those brown tube pants again.
Yeah. Why?
Stop.
I'm only mentioned Brandon's hideous Christmas sweater, but as you'll see in the visual aids, hers is really ugly too. It's like, it's one of those where I'm not sure if it's a sweater or a sweatshirt. And it's got like a heart on the front that's like made out of broken branches. It's so fucking ugly.
At least it's not a tiered, ruffly rayon thing.
For once. I'm going to say Andrea for not bringing Grandma Rose to this gathering. I mean, I know the reason is that they didn't want to pay Lainey Kazan again, but maybe she could have met Santa. There could have been a love connection and then he wouldn't have been so lonely. Come on, people.
She's home all by herself with no brisket. What the hell is that? At least cut a piece off for yourself. Dang.
Yeah.
I have a question about Mrs. Claus.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think in Santa Claus lore, they're both supposed to be immortal.
Yes.
Which means something catastrophic must have happened for her to die. You know, they're like the elves in Lord of the Rings, right?
Right.
I mean, they're sort of immortal until you know.
I think it was like that.
Unless you stick a sword through their head.
Right.
Like Mariska Hargitay's mother's accident. She was beheaded.
Yeah.
Whatever. Easily wrecked. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. That tracks. Thanks. I accept your answer.
Elves aren't their kids, are they?
They're
no.
Workforce.
Yes. Yeah,
they're the slaves of the North Pole.
Here's a conspiracy theory for everyone to chew over, like the all of Pixar takes place in the same universe theory. What if Mrs. Claus was Karen Brown?
Yeah, what if she was?
I don't know.
Weird.
And the Kim Challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to know.
Five reasons from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he's bad because he'll blow off your Christmas gathering to drive a million miles to prison.
He could have put a file in a cake and brought it into Jack McKay. That's bad.
For the purposes of this episode, please refer to him as mad, naughty, and dangerous to know.
Also in the stuff that he brought in, I mean, that could get Jack just targeted in general for abuse by people who want to steal whatever good stuff he brought.
He's not afraid to drive, like, however long it is to, who knows where Jack is, McKay Catraz. Pretty long drive. He's obviously not afraid to burn fuel, and it's bad for the environment. Or naughty, excuse me, for the environment.
Mm-hmm. It's also dangerous to wear girls' jewelry, Dylan. Although, in his defense, we don't know what he used to put his half of the pendant on. So, I mean, if he's wearing it as a cock ring, more power to him, I guess.
Yeah, maybe he implanted it in the base of his neck, like an existence.
So Merry Christmas!
Hang on a sec.
That's what
Why
she
do
said.
I get so much guff for
anyway,
elf fucking?
Wait, hang on!
How come I get so much guff for elf fucking, yet Dylan's jewelry cock ring goes without comment?
Because he's not an elf, Dave. Jesus.
All right.
Keep up.
I accept your answer.
We're all elves. That's what she said. Thanks for listening to Again With This. Enjoy the complimentary lie we will be distributing to all of our listeners. Next time, Brandon's heart is on thin ice when he falls for a skater with Olympic dreams and retails a nightmare for Brendo and blah, blah, commission, blah, who cares? You can peep the visual aids for that episode and all of our other episodes at previously.tv. And you can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I am at Tomato Nation. Tara is at Tara Ariano, and Dave is at Clark. Santa is at NorthPole_US. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.